Kamala Harris is sitting down with Bret Baier on Fox News right now as we speak. Wow. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Appreciate you being here today. Thank you for streaming on YouTube earlier in the show. I appreciate it very much. The big story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. And mark your calendar. His Veterans Breakfast is coming up on November 9th, Saturday, November 9th. Honor those who served our country and bring your documents that need shredding. Why don't we jump into a little bit of this? How about we do that? Bret Baier asking Kamala Harris about illegal immigrants released into the United States. Why don't we take a dip in? What's jip it, as they say in the biz? What do you think?
Our administration, within practically hours of taking the oath, the first bill that we offered Congress before we worked on infrastructure, before the Inflation Reduction Act, before the Chips and Science Act, before the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, the first bill, practically within hours of taking the oath, was a bill to fix our immigration system.
Yes, ma'am. It was called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021.
Exactly.
It was essentially a pathway to citizenship for the...
May I finish responding, please?
But
you have to let me finish,
you
please.
Had the White House and the House and the Senate,
I'm
and they
the
didn't bring up that bill.
I'm in the middle of responding to the point you're raising.
Okay.
And I'd like to finish.
Yes, ma'am.
We recognized from day one that to the point of this being your first question, it is a priority for us as a nation and for the American people. And our focus has been on fixing a problem. And from day one, then, we have done a number of things, including to address our asylum system and put more resources, getting more judges, what we needed to do to tighten up penalties and increase penalties for illegal crossings, what we needed to do to deal with points of entry between border entry points. That's the work we did, and we worked on supporting what was a bipartisan effort, including some of the most conservative members of the United States Congress, to actually strengthen the border. That border bill would have put 1,500 more border agents at the border, which is why I believe the Border Patrol agents supported the bill. It would have allowed us to stem the flow of fentanyl coming into the United States, which is a scourge affecting people of every background, every geographic location in our country, killing people. It would have allowed us to put more resources into prosecuting
transnational
organizations, which I have done.
I guarantee she's going to say
that.
Come on, Bret, jump in here, Bret.
Madam Vice President, a couple of things.
Prosecuted trafficking of
drugs. Come on, Bret. Come on, Bret.
Six Democrats. But let me just finish.
Six Democrats voted against that bill.
Learned about that bill and told them to kill it because he preferred to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem. And in this election, this is rightly a discussion that the American people want to have. And what they want are solutions, and they want a president of the United States who's not playing political games with the issue.
I hear you.
But actually is focused on
fishing.
Six Democrats voted against that bill. It would have allowed 1.8 million illegal immigrants into the country a year. A lot of conservatives had a problem with it. These are the six Democrats. But more importantly, back to the original premise, Jocelyn Nungeri, Rachel Morin, Lakin Riley, they are young women who were brutally assaulted and killed by some of the men who were released at the beginning of the administration, well before a negotiated bipartisan bill. Former President Clinton actually referred to Lakin Riley Sunday, campaigning for you in Georgia, saying if those men had been properly vetted, Lakin Riley probably would not have been killed. So if it wouldn't have happened, this is well before any negotiation. This is well before Donald Trump got involved in the politics. This is a specific policy decision by your administration to release these men into the country. So what I'm saying to you, do you owe those families an apology?
Let me just say, first of all, those are tragic cases. There's no question about that. There is no question
about
that.
Sounds sober, actually.
And I can't imagine the pain that the families of those victims have experienced for a loss that should not have occurred. So that is true. It is also true that if a border security had actually been passed 9 months ago, it would be 9 months.
All right, let me jump out of this because I will have lots of audio clips for you tomorrow. But I got to get to this story before I get to my next guest. And it's this story, which is what I'll be talking about tomorrow on America's Newsroom with Dana Perino tomorrow. It's from Politico. Pennsylvania is such a mess inside Team Harris's unusual levels of finger pointing. Most of the state's well-connected Democrats have been worried about the operation for months. Top Democrats in Pennsylvania are worried Vice President Kamala Harris's operation is being poorly run in the nation's biggest battleground state. They say Harris aides lack relationships with key party figures, particularly in Philadelphia and the suburbs. They complain they have been left out of events and surrogates have not been deployed effectively. And they've urged Harris staff in private meetings to do more to turn out voters of color. Some are even pointing fingers at Harris's Pennsylvania campaign manager, Nikki Liu, who they say lacks deep knowledge of Philadelphia, where the vice president must drive up voter turnout in order to win. Ryan Boyer, who as the first black head of the city's influential Building Trades Council and is considered one of the most powerful labor leaders in the state, said, "I have concerns about Nikki Liu. I don't think she understands Philadelphia." For some Pennsylvania Democratic elected officials, party leaders and allies, 20 of whom Politico spoke to for this article, they're anxious the in-state operation has set them back. Latino and black Democratic leaders met with Harris officials behind closed doors in separate meetings in Philly late last month and pressed the campaign on their concerns, which included Liu and Harris Deputy Chief of Staff Sergio Gonzalez. Leaders asked for a greater presence at local events, an improved surrogate operation, and a more sophisticated understanding of how to engage with diverse voting blocks. Liu did not respond to a request for comment for this article. In recent weeks, the in-state campaign has brought on new staff, which has given some Democrats more confidence, but they fear they are running out of time. You think? You think they're running out of time? Harris's path to victory depends on her ability to turn out the heavily Democratic voters in Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and the surrounding suburbs, a coalition that relies on a strong performance with voters of color. If the campaign can't get them to the polls, the state and the presidential race could be lost. Quote, "I feel like we're going to win here, but we're going to win it in spite of the Harris state campaign," said a Democratic elected official in the state who, like others for the story, was granted anonymity to speak freely about a sensitive matter. "Pennsylvania is such a mess, and it's incredibly frustrating." I got to wonder, too. Ever since they passed over Josh Shapiro for being the lieutenant, being the vice presidential running mate, because he's Jewish, I got to wonder how much the governor's people are torpedoing this, knowing that he can run in 4 years. You know what I mean? Like, she loses, he runs in 4 years. She wins, he may have to wait 8 years. I got to wonder how much of that, how much of this mess operation is because Shapiro and his allies are saying, you know, too bad. Nice state if you can win it. But in a statement, National Campaign Manager Julie Chavez Rodriguez, said Harris's ground game and outreach to voters of color are stronger than Trump's. Republicans have sounded alarms about Trump turnout machine in Pennsylvania and other states. Chavez Rodriguez also said that Harris is aggressively crisscrossing the state. "Our campaign is running the largest and most sophisticated operation in Pennsylvania history. We have 50 coordinated offices and nearly 400 staff on the ground. We invested in targeted advertising to black and Latino voters starting in August of 2023, and we now have spent more than any previous presidential campaign outreach to those communities. We are leaving no stone unturned." Well, of course, they're going to say that. But I guess the question I have, though, is if that's the case, why are they hemorrhaging black voters, particularly in a state like Pennsylvania? "Some of the Democrats' frustrations could be exacerbated by Pennsylvania's size and longstanding regional differences. Liu hails from Pittsburgh, which is located on the other side of the state from Philadelphia, and the major black and Latino communities in southeastern Pennsylvania. And complaints about outreach to voters of color are common in Democratic politics in Pennsylvania, but this level of frustration and finger pointing is not. A second Democratic elected official in the state described Lou, the campaign manager, as AWOL. A Pennsylvania Democratic strategist said that she empowers a culture in the campaign that has left elected officials feeling unengaged and disrespected. As an example of what Democrats say is missing, Boyer said the campaign wasn't effectively using Philadelphia Mayor Sherelle Parker as a surrogate. He argued that Parker, an African-American woman who won office last year in a tough on crime message, would help Harris win over disillusioned black voters and working class white men. Yeah, you know, I've actually wondered that, too. I've been wondering, where has the mayor of Philadelphia, where's Sherelle Parker been in all this? Because I can't recall her being out there as a surrogate for Harris in any way. I mean, I put it to you this way. I have not seen any audio of Sherelle Parker on a Sunday news show or on the campaign trail or anything. I mean, they rolled out doofus Jim Kenney in Harrisburg last week, but where the hell's the mayor been? We need young African-American men to come home. We need African-American women to come out in record numbers and disaffected African-Americans. We have surrogates in those areas that have tremendous credibility in our communities, and they are slow to get them. In a statement, the mayor of Philadelphia said, "I know what's at stake. That's why I have been directly involved in the Harris-Waltz campaign since day one." And this is what she said she's done. She has given national interviews, rallied college students, hosted a debate watch party, and participated in other events for Harris. I haven't seen her in any significant national interviews. I can't recall one off the top of my head. And part of what the frustration is that they say that the door knocking and everything else, it's not happening. Campaign is completely flooded with money, and those funds should be used to support grassroots organizations that reach Asian and Latino voters. But the party infrastructure is non-existent. Ouch. And then that whack job, Kendra Brooks, who's with the Working Families Party, the socialists, who has endorsed Harris, said there's been a lot of struggles on the in-state Harris campaign, which she attributed to folks coming into Philadelphia that are making assumptions about what needs to happen in Philadelphia and are not necessarily having the relationships to move Philadelphia politics. And then the person who was the Latino coalition manager in Pennsylvania left after 2 weeks on the job and wrote a blistering memo to state party leaders in August saying that she was provided with no access to necessary data on Latino demographics, no infrastructure to plan events or engage the Latino community. "Please give us the tools to win," she wrote in the memo. "You cannot win PA without Latinos. You do not win the presidency without PA." Now, I have to bring up another observation with all this, and that is something that the Philadelphia Inquirer pointed out a couple weeks ago, the shifting demographics in the city of Philadelphia. I'm not even talking about the burbs here, just the city of Philadelphia. And I have Latino voters now that have shifted to Trump, working class Latino voters shifting to Trump in big, big ways. The campaign says it has 50 staffers dedicated to engagement in majority black areas in the state and 30 for the job in majority Latino regions. And they say that she's been on black radio stations. Tim Walz was in Allentown on a Spanish language station, and they have ads targeting Chinese, Korean, Indonesian, and Vietnamese communities in Philadelphia. And of course, they bring up the fact that they brought Barack Obama to Pittsburgh, where he came out and talked about, you know, the brothers before he hightailed it out of there to get back to Martha's Vineyard. It is not good. I'm telling you, this is a mess. This is a mess. The article's long, and it goes on to say that Latinos, Cone, Pennsylvania, it's a group of Latinos trying to get, they feel now that things are moving in the right direction, but there's a lot of anxiety. And they think that they're way too late in the game here. I don't even think it's just the organization. I think it's just the fact that Trump is winning with Latino voters and they've lost Latino voters and they just can't comprehend it. Because his message is better and they want a secure border. All right, we got a lot more to come. Let's talk about the Harris campaign's attempts, desperate attempts to woo over men. Men, men, men. It's our fourth and final hour here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, joining me now, he is the president and CEO of Publius PR. He is the author of the White Privilege album, and he's a big shot, a big deal, because he was just on Laura Ingraham on Fox News Channel. He's AJ Rice. What's up, my man?
What's going on, brother? That's right. Lansdale Catholic has made it to the Laura Ingraham show on the Fox News Channel.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
Hide the children. Hide the children.
It's a big deal. And I tell you what, that jacket is also a big deal. I'm liking the look.
That's right.
It's very alpha white male. Can I just tell you that?
It is. It is. I'm white chocolate. You know, I'm heading over to the OTB after this.
It's not beta. It's not beta male. And when you listen, when you load a shotgun, do you load it on your crotch like Tim Waltz? I'm just asking for a friend.
I do. I load it with Playtex. So it's going to be fantastic. They shoot right into the men's locker room there. That's where he hangs out.
All right. So you got on Laura's show, which is great. You are her former producer, which I'm sure helped a lot. But you were also mentioning to me that she helped promote the book a lot, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So she gave me a shout out on Fox, and then she tweeted out the book link and did a little article up there at LauraIngrahamShow.com. Fox News actually grabbed the piece too and did their own thing with it.
Nice.
But look, my radio career really was, and my media career in general was created by two women. And, you know, some people have a mother and a father. I had two mothers, and that is right. Isn't that what's trendy now?
Okay. Yeah. My favorite book is AJ Has Two Mommies. I read that to my kids every night.
That's right. Andy has two mommies. That's right. Yeah. Tommy can take a hike. So Laura Ingraham and Monica Crowley, I was both of their executive producers. So, you know, and it almost spans almost a decade. I worked with both of them, and they influenced me. They both gave me blurbs for The Woking Dead, my first book. I was on with Monica on Monday, and they've been very supportive of me. I always tell them that, you know, everything I do from here on out, it's all your fault. So, you know, the good and the bad, I'm going to blame them for everything.
As you should. And by the way, let me just mention, too, those two women are incredibly successful. You were their producer. But the real question on everybody's mind is, did they treat you with respect, or did they treat you like I treat Matt DeSantis?
DeSantis has got it easy. Let me tell you something. Going through the Ingraham Crowley buzzsaw.
I mean,
Ingraham worked for Reagan. Crowley worked for Nixon. Ingraham clerk for Clarence Thomas at the Supreme Court. I mean, these are tough cookies.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a tough mom. My mom went to medical school, Hahnemann Medical School, which I think is part of Drexel in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And look, she went through medical school when they weren't accepting any women. When the dean of the medical school told her in the 70s, you know, you're only here because President Nixon says we have to take you. So just keep your mouth shut. Now, she's Irish Catholic from the Northeast. So she's never keeping a freaking mouth shut ever.
No, right? Of course not.
But no, I'm very comfortable with tough women. My wife's a tough woman. Judge Jeanine, you know, her part-time job is sticking her foot up my rear end. You know, I've done four books with her. You know, Naomi Wolf. I mean, I could. The list goes on. So Tulsi Gabbard, you know, Carrie Lake, MTG. We work with a lot of them, and you know, I'm not a shrinking violet. That's for sure.
Now, if MTG gets mad at you, does she send a storm over your house? I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. Let's not go there.
She deadlifts me and throws me. That's what she does.
Why do you think? I mean, we all have our ideas here, but what do you think is the biggest reason why Kamala Harris is struggling? Really, with black men in particular. I mean, going on Charlemagne the God, going on all these different shows, offering reparations, offering free money, free loans. I mean, she and Trump, they're saying now he's on track, speaking of Nixon, to perform as well as Richard Nixon did among black men. And that was a long time ago. So he's smashing records with this. What do you make it out to be that she's doing so poorly with this demo?
Well, their ability to, name call and weaponize with white privilege and shout that from the rooftop has backfired on them. Trump has made the Republican Party more working class and more multi-ethnic on a level where she's underwater with lots of groups. Now, with with African Americans, she's dripping with condescension. Barack Obama goes to Pittsburgh. He's talking to the brothers, telling them, you know, she's from the neighborhood. You should vote for her because she's from the neighborhood. I don't know what neighborhood that is. It's like the neighborhood in Canada, I guess. I don't know what neighborhood she's talking about. But I mean, Barack Obama, you know, the half white guy from Hawaii, he's talking to a bunch of Steelers fans, and they're not buying it. And he basically says, if you're not going to vote for her, then you're sexist or a misogynist or something. So what happens next? Okay, after Barack failed this week, they roll out this multi-pronged program where they're going to recruit black voters, males in particular. It's so condescending. So what are they going to do exactly? They're going to give them $20,000 to basically do whatever the hell they want with it. They're going to give them Bitcoin. I mean, this had to have been written by a white liberal staffer. It's almost like a liberal lily white stereotype closet racist would basically write.
Right.
So you're going to get Bitcoin. You're going to get 20 G's. You can take it to the, you know, you're going to get legalized weed. And then we're going to help fight all the diseases that only chase black people. Now, I don't know what they're talking about. Are they talking about sickle cell anemia? I don't know what they're talking about. Now, in my book, I do illustrate how a lot of cultural Marxists have started to blame diseases. The diseases are racist. Alzheimer's is racist.
Mm-hmm.
Diabetes is racist.
No doubt.
Because they're right. So without a doubt, and COVID absolutely was hunting black people.
100%.
So,
yeah.
You know,
huge racist.
So, I mean, it's so condescending. I've never seen anything like it. It's a Hail Mary. And, you know, it never dawns on them, Barack or her, that maybe, Rich, just maybe, you know, African-Americans want the same thing that the rest of us. They don't want the police defunded. They don't want migrants dumped off in front of their front yard. You know, they don't want, you know, crappy schools. You know, they don't want $6 eggs or the Green New Deal. I mean, I think most rational people that want to sort of, you know, protect their family and do better and have some kind of upward mobility can't be bought off with weed and bitcoins. Right?
No.
Next thing you know, she's going to start handing out Wu-Tang Clan albums. Here you go. You get a Wu-Tang Clan album. You get a Wu-Tang Clan album. You like Tupac? You get a Tupac album. It's so
stereotypical. I mean, it's like, you know, here's a case of hot sauce. Remember when Hillary Clinton pulled out the hot sauce from her purse? To try to identify with, and for Obama,
right,
going, you know, the brothers before he goes back to Martha's Vineyard, literally
right,
the whitest place on planet Earth is
all
Martha's Vineyard. Like when Obama went back to Martha's Vineyard, the population of black people went up by 100%.
Right. And if he brings Michelle, you know, it goes up a little higher. it's unbelievable. But it is exactly what I outlined in the book. And that is that, yes, I'm having fun with this term white privilege, and I'm kidnapping it and I'm weaponizing it back against the left.
Yes.
But this is their way to try to bring racial harmony. They try to buy votes or give out goodies. And when that doesn't work, then they just go all in on, you know, the very fine people lies and Trump's a racist. You can't trust the Republicans. Look, it wasn't that long ago that Trump was the president and things were way better. And not just for African-Americans. I mean, look, Kamala is underwater with Muslims in Michigan, with Jewish voters in Pennsylvania and Maryland and parts of Ohio and Florida. I mean, Ron DeSantis won Palm Beach County during his reelection, which, if you don't know, Boca Raton, you know, is, you know, a percentage Italian, but mostly it's like little Jerusalem down there. He won this because Republican policies writ large are helping more people. We're no longer just, you know, wearing our goofy Argyle sweaters, hanging out with the dorks at the Chamber of Commerce. Everyone's involved, right? And that's great. Latin Americans in Nevada, in Arizona, moving towards Trump. So, yeah, it may be a Nixon blowout. Nixon won 49 states in 1972. I don't think we'll get there. But Pennsylvania, our home state, brother, is going to be the keystone to the election.
AJ Rice is with me. He's the author of the White Privilege album. It's great to have him here today on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. I'll tell you something else, too. When it comes to white dudes, which you are one, I am one, the idea that there's toxic masculinity. And my favorite is Doug Emhoff redefining what masculinity really is. And then it turns out the guy may be the biggest male chauvinist pig in the entire country. They may have to dedicate a separate wing of male chauvinism for that guy. But for a while, they were going with this whole idea. Before all the revelations came out about who he really was, they're like, oh, look, he's a beta male. That's what every guy should be, a beta male. Women love that. Women don't like strong men. Strong men are bad. And of course, we know the translation of that is they don't want strong anybody because that's people who are going to stand up for individual liberty. They want everybody to conform. And betas, whether you're a beta male or a beta female, it's a lot easier to get you to conform for the greater good if you're not a strong person.
That's right. I mean, look, he has got some problems, and it's not just the Washington Post wrote that story about how he's redefining what masculinity is because he's become compliant to her. But he, the more revelations come out, he's slapping women, he's knocking up the nanny and taking her to Planned Parenthood. God. I mean, this is not exactly, you know, John Wayne. All right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
This guy, I mean, this guy makes, you know, Woody Allen look like Gary Cooper. I mean, that's where we're heading here. And the reason they like him is because he's compliant. But, you know, and it just like a lot of sort of liberal, you know, lily white virtue signaling men, you know, they always have that little Nancy eruptive personality. And I guarantee you, that's why he's slapping women. He's absolutely, if you're looking for the definition of white privilege, liberal privilege, he's it, right? He is it. It's not the people that want to have, you know, the Italians that have the big family or the evangelicals in the South that have the big family and everyone chips in and there is, you know, traditional gender roles. That's not toxic masculinity. That's both biblical and it's in, you know, nature. It's part of the animal kingdom. It's the one thing that Jesus and Darwin can agree on.
Right. Right. And, you know, too, the other thing is that there's also this idea of chivalry. And I mean, I want to raise my son to respect women, to be a strong man, be kind and loving and supportive and all those other things. But liberals for years, the left, not liberals, but for years has been lying about a couple of different things. Rape culture. I mean, you remember when Rolling Stone wrote that big story about the gang rape on UVA's campus, which turned out to be a total fugazi hoax, complete hoax, ran with that. But running with this idea of toxic masculinity and then trying to say that we're all out there, you know, preying on women, hunting on women. And this has had some real ramifications. What they've done on college campuses, you know, if a guy is accused of something, he's automatically guilty. There's no due process. He's kicked out of school. He's got to fight to prove his innocence. How consent now can be revoked like months or years after or now. And I had this conversation the other day with our mutual friend Wilfred Riley about this. There's even an effort now. When a guy goes on a date, the woman, like, he can't buy her more than two drinks. And I'm trying to understand this because, first of all, do I be the guy? I mean, I'm married, but if I was on a date to go, listen, woman, you get two and that's it, all right? That's all you get. And so I'm gonna like mansplain to her what she can drink. Or then if she wants a third drink and I let her have it, then what? Now I'm a rapist? I mean, I can't keep up with the rules.
Well, I mean, you have to bring a waiver. You have to bring paperwork to get her to sign.
Nothing more romantic than that. Before we engage in this kiss, can we both sign this consensual paperwork? 19 pages here of...
What's ironic is, you know, and I wrote about this in The Woking Dead, I have a section called How I Did Not Meet Your Mother. Where I go through the fact that, you know, especially with millennials and Gen Z, we, you know, and this was always true with Gen X and the boomers, too. You know, a lot of times you meet your significant other either at work, maybe at church, or on your route to work. So maybe she's standing next to you in Starbucks and, you know, someone, you know, the barista writes her name on the cup. So now you know what her name is. And if the second you say, hi, Amanda, my name's AJ, the rape whistle gets blown. Madonna shows up with the pink hat on. Okay, and Ashley Judd is screaming in your face that you need to, you might be a predator. We got predator alert. We're a predator alert, right? I mean, that's where we're at now. And so everyone's afraid to talk to the girl, ask her to the prom, say that she looks nice in the elevator, you know, go to homecoming, you know, on dates. And because the Me Too movement and the cultural Marxists have made, especially Gen Z, and they love this, totally alienated. They're totally afraid to ask anyone out because they might be a rapist. They might, you know, and you need to check your masculinity, right? So, and that is by design because you know this, and J.D. Vance knows this. They want all of us miserable, childless, unmarried, alone, sitting in our apartment with our cats from Ohio that escaped, listening to Taylor Swift. Miserable. That's what they want. And so J.D. Vance is spot on there. They love that. And then they can trickle down wokeism, which is trickle down misery. And we can all just shout about the patriarchy and white privilege with Taylor playing in the background.
I was I had to do the sexual harassment training the other day. And, you know, corporate America has nobody wants to go back to the office. COVID's changed everything. Nobody wants to go back for a lot of reasons. But one of them is because you got to walk on eggshells every time you're in the office. So I start the sexual harassment training. The first question is, do you engage in sexual harassment? I check no. I thought I was done. Strap in 50 minutes later now of indoctrination videos. And one of the things they encourage you to do is if you hear a conversation in the break room where it's like Jimmy's asking Sandy out, you got to rat them out to HR. I mean, it's not even like he's her supervisor necessarily, but multiple choice questions, what do you do? And of course, I pick my own freaking business. She seems like she can handle it. Wrong. You got to go march down the hall and rat them out to HR. And then I remember there was a time at work where a woman was going on camera. She got all dressed up. She goes, Rich, how do I look? And I went, nice. And she went, nice? That's not a word. And she got all offended. But I'm like, I don't know what I can say anymore. I don't know.
You have to calibrate your flattery. Speaking of the HR department of my own company gave me a blurb for the book. And this is what the HR department said. It said, we are lodging a formal complaint against the author of the White Privilege album. Our safe spaces cannot save us from AJ Rice. We have been emotionally triggered by his abusive content. He totally ignores the need for intersectionality in the workplace.
Yeah, you do.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm in charge of the HR department over here, so you better run for the hills.
Publius PR, one of the worst places to work in all of America, exactly. According to Woke. All right, my friend, great job. Keep up the great work and get the book, The White Privilege Album. It's great stuff. And AJ, where can we follow you on social media?
At Publius PR on X. Just find me there. You'll see everything.
All right, brother. Thanks for joining us here. And good job on being on Laura Ingraham's show. Big shot.
Thanks, brother. I'm
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Yes, the sleeper issue of 2024, transgender athletes in sports, bio dudes infiltrating women's teams. Welcome back to the show. Glad you're here. What a day. It's Wednesday, and we're almost to the end of the week. That's right. Don't forget December 20th. Mark your calendar. Our next live show at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. We've had a number of great guests on the show, you know, Riley Gaines, Paula Scanlon, who did a town hall recently with Dave McCormick and Governor Ron DeSantis on this issue. She was a swimmer at Penn, where Will Thomas got in the pool with his schlong and proceeded to win races. And it is outrageous. And we have to speak out against this stuff because women's sports deserves protection. Women deserve protection. And as parents, we are sick and tired of this crap happening. And this is the sleeper issue of 2024. I agree. I definitely believe so. The sleeper issue of 2024. Did I say 2023? 2024. It's a long show. What are you going to do? We're almost to Fela time. Give me a break. Trump was asked a question, and he was very clear about this. You know, we're just not going to let this happen. That's the bottom line. We're not going to let this happen. This is all under the Title IX rewrite that, again, the Biden administration did by executive fiat. Wasn't Congress didn't pass this. This was the Biden administration doing this with the stroke of a pen. And it is something that Trump can undo with the stroke of a pen if he gets elected. So that's the thing. If you make it by executive action, you can undo it by executive action. And this is the exchange here, which definitely worth listening here.
Up and down the ballot. How many of you are worried about biological men and boys competing against women and girls in sports? Just show me. That's almost the entire, that is the entire room.
Entire room.
And I know you have a women. Question.
Yep. I do.
By the way, excuse me. It's so crazy.
Your question, yes. Your name and your hometown.
My name is Linda and I'm from Milton, Georgia.
Good.
But originally Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, wow.
I'd get
that's
that.
Good.
My question is, how do you plan on addressing the transgender issue in women's sports? I have 9 grandchildren, 6 of them female, wow. All playing sports, and we are very concerned for their safety, not just on the field and the courts, but in their locker rooms as well.
Right. It's such an easy question, and everybody in the room, and you know that answer, we're not going to let it happen. You look, just yesterday, they had a volleyball match, did you see that?
Yeah.
Where a person that transitioned, okay, we have to be very careful because this can terminate your political career if you say it's slightly off, all right? But transitioned from man to female and was on a volleyball, and I saw the slam. It was a slam. I never saw a ball hit so hard, hit the girl on the head. But other people, even in volleyball, they've been permanently, I mean, they've been really hurt badly, women playing men. But you don't have to do the volleyball. We stop it. We stop it. We absolutely stop it. You can't have it. It's a man playing in the game. I mean, physically, from a muscular standpoint, even if it was a little bit less, maybe they do all sorts of tests and drugs and everything else. Look at what's happened in swimming. Look at the records that are being broken.
So how do you stop it? Do you go to the sports leagues? Do you go to the Olympics?
You just ban it. The president bans it. You just don't let it happen. Not a big deal.
It's not a big deal. And, of course, you can't transition your sex, your gender. Oh, you know, one of the things we were talking about with Jimmy Failla recently was how liberals hate Elon Musk. They hate him now. Like they'll drive a Tesla and they'll have a jail Elon Musk sticker on the back of it. The guy who at one time made electric vehicles something that the left loves, accessible and something everybody could afford. And they've lost their minds over this. Jason Bateman, the actor, who, by the way, I love as an actor. He's great. He's funny. Some of his best. Teen Wolf, am I right? I mean, come on. Or Teen Wolf 2, technically, because Michael J. Fox was Teen Wolf 1. But anyway, done a lot of great stuff. Arrested Development. I mean, he's great. Great actor. But he's a kooky lefty. It's all right. I mean, I'll still watch his stuff. You know how I am. I don't cancel because of people's politics. They cancel us. Literally, they cancel us. He won't drive a Tesla anymore. He was talking with Tim Walz, Tampon Tim. This is the exchange.
I'm so excited that every single car brand now has a fully electric car. And you know, I don't want to throw undue shade towards Mr. Musk, but I got to tell you, politics is I got rid of my Tesla. I feel like I'm driving around a Trump sticker with that car. So it's gone. And I am now enjoying.
I call it the crypto truck.
I got rid of my Tesla. I won't drive a Tesla anymore because it's a Trump sticker. Thank you for proving my point. You people are freaking nuts. Thank you for proving the point that I was making, which is that you people are completely and utterly unhinged. You're unhinged. There's nothing normal about you. You won't drive a Tesla because of Elon Musk. All right. That's the show for you today, kids. Come back tomorrow. And Jimmy Failla, Fox Across America, is up next. Please keep the conversation going on X at Rich Zeoli. Remember, Instagram at Zeoli Show. And don't forget, December 20th, mark your calendar for the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, our next live show. It's going to be a blast. So stay tuned for that. And thank you for listening.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.